The truth is that there are many correct answers as to why Christ was killed. There are many correct answers. There's one correct answer that I have never, ever heard anybody address or say. And I want to cover that, and it obviously will be more than just tonight that we'll be covering it. We'll go into at least next week in regards to it. You're going to see that it goes much deeper than the fact that just a bunch of angry Jews. You're going to see more of the core of the reasoning behind why they killed Jesus Christ. But once again, why was Christ killed? There are a number of correct answers, many correct answers as to why Christ was killed. So we're going to pursue one from a different angle as to why he was killed. And I haven't heard it covered before. So anyhow, did they get this thing fixed, Michael?
Yes.
Oh, it's recording? Okay. 1 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 1. Now, as touching things offered unto idols, we know that we all have knowledge. Knowledge puffeth up, but charity edifieth. And if any man think that he knoweth anything, he knoweth nothing yet as he ought to know. But if any man love God, the same is known of him. As concerning, therefore, the eating of those things that are offered in sacrifice unto idols, we know that an idol is nothing in the world, and that there is none other God but one. For though there be that are called gods, whether in heaven or in earth, as there be gods many and lords many, but to us there is but one God, the Father, of whom are all things, and we in him, and one Lord Jesus Christ, by whom are all things, and we by him. Howbeit, there is not in every man that knowledge. For some, with conscience of the idol unto this hour, eat it as a thing offered unto an idol, and their conscience being weak is defiled. But meat commendeth us not to God. For neither if we eat are we the better, neither if we eat not are we the worse. But take heed, lest by any means this liberty of yours becomes a stumbling block to them that are weak. We're going to hold up there. Well, no, let's go ahead and finish the chapter out. For if any man see thee which has knowledge sit at meat in the idol's temple, shall not the conscience of him which is weak be emboldened to eat those things which are offered to idols? And through thy knowledge shall the weak brother perish for whom Christ died. But when you sin so against the brethren and wound their weak conscience, you sin against Christ. Wherefore, if meat make my brother to offend, I will eat no flesh while the world standeth, lest I make my brother to offend. Paul is addressing an issue here at Corinth where idolatry was of the main practice. It was a common practice with the Greeks. It was common practice with the Romans. So he's addressing these Greeks here, and they had their gods and their idols and their temples, and you would have festivals and celebrations and certain days dedicated to them, and they would have, just like any festival, they would have food that would be dedicated to their gods. So you had some at Corinth that would go there without any conscience whatsoever about it and go and eat there. However, you had others at Corinth that were saved that were offended by those that would go and eat there. And so Paul knows the difference. Paul knew it was no big deal to go to a temple and eat of whatever was sacrificed to the idols. Because he says, if you look down in verse 5, for though there be that are called gods, whether in heaven and earth, and there be gods many and lords many. And there are many gods and lords out there. But to us, there is but one God, the Father of whom are all things, and we in him, and one Lord Jesus Christ, by whom are all things, and we by him. So Paul had a grip on this. He realized that an idol is nothing. It couldn't hear, it can't see, it can't, it's nothing. It's like the figment of an imagination. But it persuaded people, and the world was caught up with these idols. But Paul understood the idol is nothing, therefore you're not sacrificing truly to any god. So it wasn't that it bothered Paul to ever had eaten any of that food, but the concern there was the offense it would cause to a weak brother who saw that as an offense to eat of the food of the idol that was offered there. Now, that kind of just lays a little bit of the groundwork of where we're going to go here. And probably at the end of this, we're going to wrap this whole study around and probably wind up making a circle and coming back to 1 Corinthians 8 towards the end of the study. And you'll see how it will unfold as we go. Now, with that said, turn to Matthew chapter 5. Look in Matthew chapter 5. In Matthew 5, look in verse 17. He tells them, "Think not that I am come to destroy the law of the prophets. I am not come to destroy, but to fulfill. For verily I say unto you, till heaven and earth pass, one jot or one tittle shall in no wise pass from the law till all be fulfilled. Whosoever therefore shall break one of these least commandments and shall teach men so, he shall be called the least in the kingdom of heaven, but whosoever shall do and teach them, the same shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven." The Lord said it pretty clear here. Think not that I am come to destroy the law of the prophets, verse 17. I've not come to destroy, but to fulfill. Then he says in 18, till heaven and earth pass, one jot or one tittle shall in no wise pass from the law till all be fulfilled. So the law has not passed as far as the ministry of Christ at that time. However, take a look, and he fulfills this saying in Matthew chapter 8. Look in Matthew chapter 8, and look in Matthew 8. Go to verse 1. When he was come down from the mountain, great multitudes followed him. So he's established a following. And trust me, that following caught the attention of the scribes and the Pharisees and the religious leaders of that time. And behold, there came a leper and worshipped him, saying, "Lord, if thou wilt, thou canst make me clean." And Jesus put forth his hand, touched him, saying, "I will, be thou clean," and immediately his leprosy was cleansed. So the Lord cleansed the leper's leprosy at this time, right? Now you remember Matthew 5 we just read? He's not going to destroy the law or anything. He won't destroy it, right? Okay. So look at the next verse, verse 4. "And Jesus saith unto him, See thou tell no man, but go thy way, show thyself to the priest, and offer the gift that Moses commanded for testimony unto them." Well, what is he referring to? Turn back to Leviticus. Look back in Leviticus. And we're not going to read all this. If someone wants to read the entire of Leviticus chapter 14, you can do so. Anybody? You want to stand up and read? Okay. Well, we'll just cover part of it and you'll get the idea of what he was talking about in Leviticus chapter 14. In Leviticus 14, and it's going to be hard to really find a cutoff because really, in truthfulness, it covers the entire chapter, which you can see 14 is pretty lengthy. So we're just going to get started to give you an idea. In verse 1, the Lord spake to Moses saying, "This shall be the law of the leper in the day of his cleansing. He shall be brought unto the priest. The priest shall go forth out of the camp, and the priest shall look, and behold, if the plague of leprosy be healed in the leper, then shall the priest command him to take for him, that is to be cleansed, two birds, alive and clean, and cedar wood, and scarlet, and hyssop. And the priest shall command that one of the birds be killed in an earthen vessel over running water. And as for the living bird, he shall take it, and the cedar wood, and the scarlet, and the hyssop, and shall dip them and the living bird in the blood of the bird that was killed over the running water. And he shall sprinkle upon him that is to be cleansed from the leprosy seven times, and shall pronounce him clean. and he shall let the living bird loose into the open field. And he that is to be clean, cleansed shall wash his clothes and shave off all his hair and wash himself in water, that he may be clean. And after that he shall come into the camp and shall tarry abroad out of his tent 7 days. But it shall be on the seventh day that he shall shave all his hair off his head. You see, you can just shave your head, Christy. Yeah, there you go. And shave his beard and his eyebrows. Even all his hair he shall shave off. And he shall wash his clothes, and also he shall wash his flesh in water, and he shall be clean. And on the eighth day he shall take 2 he-lambs without blemish, 1 ewe lamb of the first year without blemish, and 3 tenth deals of fine flour for meat offering and mingled with oil, and 1 log of oil. And it goes on and on, talks about the blood from the lamb. He is to dab the right ear, the right thumb, and the right big toe of them, and then take the oil and do the same thing the priest was. So it was a process of the leper being healed. So when you go back to Matthew chapter 28, what you find is the Lord is going about doing these healings, doing these miracles, and he's getting a following. People, you know, are believing in him. This leper that came up in Matthew chapter 8, he had a belief that he was the Lord. Turn back there in Matthew 8. You got to look at this from the perspective of the individual that's addressing the Lord, coming up to him. And in verse 2, behold, there came a leper and worshipped him, saying, Lord. Well, right there, that statement of Lord was his belief that he was the Messiah. He was the Lord that was to come unto Israel. And he said, if thou wilt, thou can make me whole. So he believed that he was the Lord and could do this healing. And the Lord did that. And what did he tell him after that? He said, go and offer the gift that you're to give on, you know, according to Moses that had commanded you. So he fulfilled Matthew chapter 5 in saying, I've not come to destroy the law of the prophets. And he commanded him to go. So everything was in order as to how it should be done. But keep in mind, as the Lord was going forth with these things and doing these healings and miracles and what have you, he gathered more people behind him in support and belief in him. And so it caught the attention of the scribes and the Pharisees, and it didn't settle well with them. So look over in, let's try John chapter 5. Look in John chapter 5. In John 5, verse 1, after this there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Now there is at Jerusalem by the sheep market a pool, which is called in the Hebrew tongue Bethesda, having 5 porches. In these lay a great multitude of impotent folk, of blind, halt, withered, waiting for the moving of the water. For an angel went down at a certain season into the pool and troubled the water. Whosoever then first, after the troubling of the water, stepped in was made whole of whatsoever disease he had. And a certain man was there which had an infirmity 38 years. And when Jesus saw him lie and knew he had been now a long time in that case, he saith unto him, Will thou be made whole? The impotent man answered him, Sir, I have no man when the water is troubled to put me into the pool. But while I'm coming, another steppeth down before me. So you see what happens when real healing takes place. You'll get stepped over. I mean, you know, it's a gang rush. It's kind of like the doors at the stores opening for Black Friday, right? They'll just run right over you. And in verse 8, Jesus says to him, Rise, take up thy bed and walk. And immediately the man was made whole and took up his bed and walked. And on the same day was the Sabbath. The Jews therefore saith unto him that was cursed, It is a Sabbath day. It is not lawful for thee to carry thy bed. Forget about the fact that he can walk. They're just focused in on the fact that it's a Sabbath, and you should keep the Sabbath and not care. I mean, they're missing the whole picture here, right? Verse 11, he answered them, "He that made me whole, the same said unto me, take up thy bed and walk." Then asked they him, "What man is that which said to thee, take up thy bed and walk?" We want to get to the bottom of this type attitude, you see. "And he that was healed was not who it was, for Jesus had conveyed himself away, a multitude being in that place. Afterward, Jesus findeth him in the temple and said unto him, Behold, thou art made whole, sin no more, lest a worse thing come upon thee. The man departed and told the Jews that it was Jesus which had made him whole, and therefore did the Jews persecute Jesus." Did y'all catch that?
Yeah, persecute.
Therefore, y'all caught that, right?
Yeah, right.
Okay. "And sought to slay him because he had done these things on the Sabbath day. But Jesus answered them, My Father worketh hitherto, and I work. Therefore, the Jews sought the more to kill him, because he not only had broken the Sabbath, but said also that God was his Father, making himself equal with God." Well, this will blow your mind if you hold that and turn to Philippians, something that I've been reading to you for a few weeks. Let's touch on that while we're right here. In Philippians chapter 2. Now, if you think back on John 5, verse 18, I'll read it again for anybody that forgot. "Therefore, the Jews sought the more to kill him, because he not only had broken the Sabbath, but said also that God was his Father, making himself equal with God." And then when you go to Philippians chapter 2, Paul writes in verse 5, "Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ, who being in the form of God, thought it not robbery to be equal with God." Now, they accused him of what he was doing. He was making himself equal with God. They didn't like that. They got moved by the fact that he also was performing these healings. They didn't like that either. That was a priestly duty, right? According to the law, the priest had that calling. So these scribes and these Pharisees and the priesthood at that time, they're getting all the uppity-ups in the Jewish religion are now getting disturbed by this man who called himself Jesus, the Christ, and has a following and is doing all these signs and stuff. It's kind of upending who, you know, their purpose, you know, of who they are. And there's a threat there. And watch how it changes their whole attitude towards this. Turn to Matthew and go to Matthew chapter 12. In Matthew chapter 12, verse 22, "Then was brought unto him one possessed with a devil, blind and dumb. And he healed him, insomuch that the blind and dumb both spake and saw. And all the people were amazed and said, Is not this the son of David? But when the Pharisees heard it," what did they hear?
About the healing.
About the healing, right? Okay. "They said, This fellow does cast out devils, but by Beelzebub, the prince of devils. Jesus knew their thoughts and said unto them, Every kingdom divided against itself is brought to desolation, and every city or house divided against itself shall not stand. And if Satan cast out Satan, he is divided against himself. How shall then his kingdom stand? And if I, by Beelzebub, cast out devils, by whom do your children cast them out? Therefore they shall be your judges. But if I cast out devils by the Spirit of God, then the kingdom of God has come unto you. Or else how can ye enter into a strong man's house and spoil his goods, except he first bind the strong man, and then he will spoil his goods? He that is not with me is against me, and he that gathereth not with me scattereth abroad." So you see that there's a reaction when Christ did this healing to this man who was dumb and deaf, and all of a sudden he can speak and he can hear, and the Pharisees heard about it, And their response was, you know, Christ is doing this by the devil. They identified him as a devil, basically. And so Christ said, well, if I'm doing it by the devil, then who are your children doing it by? You know, remember the priests and the lepers that would come and all that? Who'd your children doing it by if I'm doing the same thing? You know, and they've got to think then, well, we can't put him on the same line now, right? Because then he talks about the fact of verse 29, or else how can one enter a strong man's house and spoil his goods except he first bind the strong man and then spoil the house, his house? Well, the house there has to do with the world. The strong man there has to do with the devil. And so what the Lord's goal is to go in, and he's going to ultimately bind the strong man, the devil, and spoil his house. He's going to take everything back. And that's what was that was the plan that God had put in place by sending his son, to go in there and get the kingdom established and go in there and gradually take over the kingdom, bind the devil. You see that when he returns, according to Revelation, they bind the devil and cast him in the bottomless pit for 1,000 years, right? So then he comes in and he spoils the house. He takes it over. To the victor be the spoils. He then accomplishes that. But nonetheless, the point that I want to make here is their reaction concerning his healing. When he healed, there was a negative reaction to that. They didn't like that. Keep these things in mind as we go forward. If you look over in Acts chapter 2, look in Acts chapter 2. Just kind of laying groundwork now for as we move forward here. In Acts 2, verse 22. Peter is preaching to the men of Israel. He says, men of Israel, hear these words. Jesus of Nazareth, a man approved of God among you by miracles and wonders and signs, which God did by him in the midst of you, as ye yourselves also know. Him being delivered by the determinate counsel and foreknowledge of God, you have taken and by wicked hands have crucified and slain, whom God hath raised up, having loosed the pains of death, because it was not possible they should be holden of it. So here we see a situation where Peter is preaching after the resurrection and ascension of Christ to these men of Israel. He says, hear these words, Jesus of Nazareth, a man approved of God among you by miracles and wonders and signs. So Jesus Christ did the miracles, wonders, and signs in front of them. There was no question about it. It was there. So what they have to do is go against their conscience of what they witnessed to try to put him down. So what brought a great persecution to the Lord? It was the healing and the miracles that he did. That was part of the great persecution. Now, like I said, what put Christ to death? What was the reason why Christ was killed? Well, there are a multitude of correct answers. It was in accordance with the Scriptures. Okay, that's a correct answer, right? Yes. The Scriptures declared it, so that's why he was killed. He was killed by declaring himself to be the Son of God. He was killed. He was killed by declaring to be the King of the Jews. So there's a multitude of correct answers, but I'm trying to steer you in another way, because there is another correct answer that we're not real familiar with. And that is, it has to do with miracles. But I want to show you the depth of it as we go forward with this. Turn to Acts chapter 14. And we're going to pick up here with Paul and Barnabas as they're going through their ministry. In verse 14, and it came to pass in Iconium that they went both together into the synagogue of the Jews, and so spake, that a great multitude, both of the Jews and also of the Greeks, believed. But the unbelieving Jews stirred up the Gentiles and made their minds evil affected against the brethren. Huh? Acts 14. What did I do? Acts 14, verse 1.
Yeah.
That's where we
caught up.
That's where we're at. Let's try it again. And it came to pass in Iconium that they went both together into the synagogue of the Jews, and so spake, that a great multitude, both of the Jews and also the Greeks, believed. But the unbelieving Jews stirred up the Gentiles and made their minds evil affected against the brethren. Long time, therefore, abode they speaking boldly in the Lord, which gave testimony unto the word of his grace, and granted signs and wonders to be done by their hands. But the multitude of the city was divided, and a part held with the Jews, and a part with the apostles. And when there was an assault made both of the Gentiles, and also of the Jews with the rulers, to use them despitefully, and to stone them, they were aware of it, and fled into Lystra and Derbe, cities about Lycaonia, and into the region that lieth round about, and there they preach the gospel. So you see, Paul and Barnabas are over here, and they're preaching in this region of Iconium, and you had some Greeks and Jews that got saved. However, there were others there that weren't so well with the idea, and you know, it seemed like the unbelieving Greeks there were pretty content with Paul preaching. It's kind of like, hey, he's doing his own thing. We have no issue. Until the unbelieving Jews got in there and stirred them up. But once again, there's something you might want to note there. Verse 3. Long time, therefore, abode they speaking boldly in the name of the Lord, which gave testimony of the word of his grace, and granted signs and wonders to be done by their hands. So they are also doing signs and wonders. You remember what Peter said in Acts 2? Jesus Christ was before you with many mighty signs and wonders that were done before you. And so here we come to Paul and Barnabas are doing these mighty signs. But the unbelieving Jews, they didn't buy into it, and they started persecuting them, so they had to leave out. And they come over to Derbe, and they go into Derbe and Lystra. So in verse 8, we continue here. So they've left there, and they go and preach. And there sat a certain man at Lystra, impotent in his feet, being crippled from his mother's womb, who never had walked. The same heard Paul speak, who steadfastly beholding him and perceiving that he had faith to believe. And you know, folks, a lot of the faith healers today, when an individual goes to their whatever revival that they're having, and they go there for healing and they don't get healed, trust me, they go to this verse real quick. The end of verse 9. Perceiving that he had faith to be healed. So if you don't get healed, they tell you what? You didn't have the faith to be healed, you know? So they always hold that little ditty over on you. And, you know, that's their little catch there. But anyhow, he saw that he had faith to be healed. Verse 10. Said with a loud voice, stand upright on thy feet, and he leapt and walked. You don't see that either at these healing services. You know, you see them with back pain or knee problems, and they're creeping along, and then they bop them on the head, and they creep a little faster along, and that's about the best it does. This is a guy that was lame from many, many years and said, be healed, and he jumped up and just, you know, went about walking around. Yeah, and I think it gives his age. We'll have to check that. Maybe another account with someone else. But verse 11, and when the people saw that what Paul had done, they lifted up their voices, saying in the speech of Lycaonia, the gods are come down to us in the likeness of men. And they called Barnabas Jupiter and Paul Mercurius, because he was a chief speaker. Then the priest of Jupiter, which was before their city, brought oxen and garlands unto the gates, and would have done sacrifice with the people, which when the apostles Barnabas and Paul heard of, they rent their clothes and ran in among the people, crying out, saying, sirs, why do ye these things? We also are of men of like passions with you, and preached unto you that you should turn from these vanities unto the living God, which made heaven and earth and the sea and all things that are therein, who in time past suffered all nations to walk in their own ways. Nevertheless, he left not himself without witness in that he did good, and gave us rain from heaven and fruitful seasons, filling our hearts with food and gladness. And with these sayings, scarce restrained they the people, that they had not done sacrifice unto them. And there came thither certain Jews from Antioch and Iconium, they're following them, right? Who persuaded the people, and having stoned Paul, drew him out of the city, supposing he'd been dead, and then he wasn't dead. He gets up and they move on. This is a very interesting story with this individual who was from birth crippled, and Paul goes in there and perceives that, and apparently there must have been something that went along there in the sense of when Paul was preaching, this crippled guy heard and he believed. So obviously he must have believed the gospel, because that's what Paul is preaching about the Lord. And he perceived that he had faith to be healed. And so this guy gets healed and he jumps up and runs around. Well, the people there of Lycaonia, I guess is how you say it, they're pretty impressed with what just took place. And their comment was there in verse 11, the gods are come down to us in the likeness of men. Now you remember in 1 Corinthians 8, remember we read that where Paul talked about, you know, we all have knowledge of gods and there be many gods and many lords. And so you look at this event that took place there, and what did they want to do with Paul and Barnabas? Well, they wanted to have a festival. They wanted to have a celebration. Why? Because the gods are there. You know, we saw something magnificent here. Can't talk. And consequently, they wanted to have this celebration. Paul had to settle down, guys. We're men of like passion. In other words, we're like you. It's just the Lord is using us in this healing and the preaching that we've brought to you. And so they got really excited about all this, in so much that in verse 12, they called Barnabas Jupiter and Paul Mercurius because he was a chief speaker. So what did they do with these men? What did they do with Barnabas and Paul? Once they saw the healing that took place, they gave them names of their gods, Jupiter and Mercurius. And Mercurius is the word that we get for Mercury. So I could say Mercury and not hurt the word Mercurius. And it's a name that we give to our planet, just like Jupiter we gave to our planet. If you ever do a study and research on this and it goes deep and far, you'll see that a lot of our lives are wrapped up in mythology. I mean, you know, and we do these things and we don't even, you know, we sit here and I've heard for years, you know, we're in this world, but we're not of this world. That's a bunch of baloney. You are of this world. What we're looking to do is get out of this world, you know, because we are to a degree attached. And you can't really separate yourself in totality to where you're not connected to it. I mean, you're in months that are named after paganism. You've got your stars and planets that are named after pagan gods. I mean, the calendar has been corrupted. I mean, come on, you're all in a part of it. The days of the week are named after, you know, Sunday, the sun god, and all these other things. So you're all a part of it to some degree. So I did a little research on all this, and, you know, it was one of those things I didn't know where to really cut the whole thing off at. So what we're going to do is I'm going to lay a little bit of this down because we're closing in on the top of the hour, and we're going to come back and start in this area because I really want to build it up to next week, okay? But let's just look at this for a minute. I just Wikipedia'd this, okay? I didn't go into any super depth research because it leads, it's like a spider web. It just keeps spreading out and it connects. It just keeps going. But Jupiter is interesting. You know, they call Barnabas Jupiter. Keep that in mind. I got something for you on that next week. And so I look up Jupiter, and I'm just going to read. Some of these words are done in the Roman writing, so I'm going to have trouble with it. But I'm just going to read it. I know this is kind of boring, but listen up so you'll understand. In ancient Rome religion and myth, Jupiter, or J-O-V-E, Jove, is a king of the gods and the god of the sky and thunder. So this was in Roman mythology. Who was their god?
Jupiter.
Jupiter was their god. And he was the ultimate god of all gods. And you can go into this mythology. You can look up Roman mythology. And they had a god for everything. You understand? Everything, there was a god. That's why Paul said to the Greeks there at Corinth, there be gods many and lords many. We just don't understand it because we're not historians. If you get into a history study of it, you would be shocked. I just spent a little time here, and I'm going, it just kept going and going and going. I'm like, I can't go into it that far. It's just too much. But he was the god. He was the god of the Romans. Jupiter was a chief deity of the Roman state religion throughout the Republican and Imperial eras, until Christianity became dominant religion of the empire. In Roman mythology, he negotiates with Numa Pompilus, the second king of Rome, to establish principles of Roman religion, such as sacrifice. Jupiter is usually thought to have originated as a sky god. So he's the big man upstairs, okay? He is in Rome. That would be their god, like our father, the Lord Jesus Christ, Father, okay? That's who they saw him as. His identifying implement in the statues they've uncovered and unearthed is he has a lightning bolt. His primary sacred animal is the eagle. The eagle?
America.
Which held precedence over other birds in the auspices of it and became one of the most common symbols of the Roman army. The two emblems were often combined to represent the god in the form of an eagle holding in its claws a thunderbolt, frequently seen as Greek and Roman coins. As a sky god, he was divine witness to oaths, the sacred trust on which justice and good government depend. Many of his functions were focused on its Capitolini, probably, is how it would be done in Italian. Capitolini. But in English, it's Capitol Hill. Just saying. Where the citadel was located. So he had a temple in Rome. Jupiter had a temple in Rome. And they had an altar. And they had sacrifices and all that there. And so consequently, if you were brought to court, you would go to that temple, you put your hand on that thing and said, in the name of Jupiter, I promise to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth. Just telling you. Okay? He was the chief deity of the early capital triad of Mars and somebody else. I can't read the word. His sacred tree that they identified to him was the oak. You go back in the Old Testament, you'll see something called groves of trees, where in the groves of trees are altars where the heathen, the Gentiles, the pagans had altars in the groves of trees where they went and sacrificed and had their festivals and parties. Well, this thing connects right back. Back it up. Acts chapter 14 with the account of Paul and Barnabas. Put this thing in reverse in time. Go back to the garden to a tree. It all connects. It connects. So they had this tree there. The Lord told Israel when they go through, cut the groves down. Burn the altars. Tear it down. Okay? So you see the connection now. Now, on the other hand, listen to this. The Romans regarded Jupiter as the equivalent of the Greek Zeus. So here's what you had. You had the Roman Empire, which had provinces and states that they were over, and they were under the influence of Rome. Who was their god?
Jupiter.
But you had the Greeks that had their dominion over areas too. Their god, which was equal in their view towards their god as the Romans toward Jupiter, was Zeus. His other name was Hermes, H-E-R-M-E-S. Matter of fact, in Romans chapter 16, there's a Christian there named Hermes. If you go check his, you do a search on the concordance, it'll be Zeus was his name. They named him after, you know, the Roman, the Greek god. So you see, every culture had their gods. It's like today. Cultures have their gods. When the settlers came into the United States and you had the Native Indians here, they believed in the ultimate spirit, the spirit of all spirits. Everybody had the ultimate god, but they also had a multitude of gods below them. So think about that when you consider the fact that Israel was apostate and that they had ingrained themselves into the Gentile culture and they were lackadaisical to these gods and participated in the worship with these gods along with the Gentiles. So the ones that really got flustered by all this was your Orthodox committed Jews that were committed to the law of Moses. An example of that would be Paul. Paul was above all his brethren concerning his zeal for God in that he persecuted the church. So he was above all them in his zeal for God. So what you had was Gentiles that got saved by the ministry of Paul, and you had Jews that got saved, and some of those Jews that got saved were out of that Orthodox type thing. They were real stringent even after they got saved in their commitment to the law. They didn't keep the law to be saved. They just kept the law because it was a tradition with them. So what happened was in the account of Corinth, you had those people that were, they had been involved in these pagan worships and celebrations and all, and they'd go to them. And that's why Paul said, we know that there are gods many and lords many, but to us, there's only one God. So what he's saying is, the food is really no issue. You're not eating it to a god, but what happens is that fundamental Orthodox Jew that was saved, his conscience gets broke down. You destroy him in his faith in the Lord by going there and eating. So that's why Paul said, I will not do it if it hurts my brother. Going back to 1 Corinthians chapter 8 of where we were. So you see this practice. So what happened was Barnabas got titled as Jupiter. Now, Acts 14, verse 9. The same heard Paul what?
Speak.
Who steadfastly beholding him, perceiving that he had faith to be healed, said with a loud voice. Who said with a loud voice? Paul. Stand upright on thy feet. And he leapt and he walked. Now look down to verse 12. And they called Barnabas Jupiter and Paul Mercurius because he was a what? Chief speaker. Okay. Well, back to Wikipedia. Mercury, Mercurius, is a major Roman god within ancient Roman times. He was a patron god of financial gain, commerce, eloquence, as in poetry, messages, communication, including divination. The healing thing, so he had a talk and he could walk the walk, right? He was a God over travelers, boundaries, luck, trickery, thieves. He's also the God of souls to the underworld. He moves, he goes, he escorts. He was considered the son of Maia and Jupiter in Roman anthology. Mercury was considered the son of Jupiter. Keep that in mind. We'll go over this next week. It's going to be big, I'm telling you. His name is possibly related to the Latin word merc, M-R-X, which is merchandise or merchant, trade, wages. In his earliest forms, he appears to be related to the Etruscan deity and blah, blah, blah. You don't need to know all that. Blah, 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 blah. However, he fell in love with this woman and Mercury has influenced the name of many things in a variety of scientific fields, such as the planet Mercury, the element Mercury. The word mercurial is commonly used to refer to something or someone erratic, volatile, unstable, derived from Mercury's swift flights from place to place. In other words, he's flighty. You ever hear someone say flighty? That's mercurial, if you ever use a phraseology. Now watch this. He is often, in the statues that they have of him, and I have a picture of one here, he is often depicted holding the caduceus in his left hand. Now, the caduceus was a staff, and what it had on it was two snakes that intertwined up the staff, and they came together at the head. I wonder, but it goes further than that. What? Medical. The medical field uses that symbol. That's what I said. You know, you get sick, you run off to the doctor, right? But you don't say, oh, that's part of the satanic, you know, gods there, and I'm not going to go to the doctor, right? Yeah, right. Take it down for me. All right. Remove it from your wall. Take it off the ambulance when I'm laid out in the street. Yeah. Before you come pick me up. That's why I said this thing of you're in the world, but you're not of the world. You're of the world. Seriously. Golly. And also he's identified with, let me see. Let me just second here. Yeah, I mean, he's used as a, right. Yeah, the wings on his, he has them on the headband and the shoe in the feet to give him that movement. And so he's got the divination, does a little magic there. He's identified, and he's a great speaker. What happened to the guy that was lame? He got healed by what? The communication of Paul. So what do? They call him Mercurius or Mercury. And they call Barnabas Jupiter now. We'll continue with this next week because we're after the 8 hour. So we're going to go from here, and it's going to ratchet up a little bit in the direction that we're going to go. So, and it all stems back to why was Christ killed?